This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program. Welcome to Blueprint for Wealth, a program dedicated to securing your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. Now, here's your host, Wayne Zell.
Good morning and welcome to Blueprint for Wealth. I'm Wayne Zell, your host of this fast-paced half hour of special topics and special guests designed to help you realize your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by the premier law firm of Odin, Feldman, and Pittleman, located in Reston, Virginia, and serving the entire D.C. metro area with clients all across the country. If you'd like to learn more about our firm and what we can do for you, visit us on the web at ofplaw.com. Also, I invite you to subscribe to my blog, blueprintforwealth.org, where we will focus on audio, video, and articles of interest in tax, estate planning, and business planning. Today, I think that mergers and acquisitions are going to be our topic of discussion, and I think there seems to be an increase in the potential for these types of transactions in light of the fact that we've resolved our issues over tax reform. Well, at least tax legislation has been resolved for at least another year until we tackle tax reform. And so we know a little bit more with a little bit more certainty what the tax rates are going to be on sales of businesses. And they're not as bad as they could have been, the transactional taxes. So I think a lot more movement is occurring in the merger and acquisition market, particularly in the case of privately held and closely held companies. So with that in mind, I wanted to focus on the fact that not only is it a great time to merge or buy a business, but I think there's also a few things that you need to be aware of, mistakes that can be avoided in your planning if you're doing the buying, or if you're a seller, things that you need to be aware of as well. Number one, I think the number one mistake that people make is loving the deal too much. In other words, you've set your sights on a target, or you've got your eye on a buyer, and the negotiations become drawn out to the point where you want to do anything that it takes at all costs to get the deal done. So your resolve to get the deal done overwhelms maybe what better judgment might dictate. In other words, you're a victim of deal frenzy. Some CEOs or business owners see an acquisition that may add short-term sales and profits and put them on the cover of a magazine or in the Washington Business Journal or local newspapers for all the wrong reasons. In other words, a successful acquisition might really not necessarily mean short-term profits and short-term gain. It means long-term benefits for the company. That's what a successful M&A transaction yields. So you have to maintain your discipline throughout the negotiations in an M&A transaction. That's sage advice from Sandy Weill, who's the former chairman and creator of Citigroup. You can get carried away, he says, feeling you have to get this thing done, and before you know it, you throw all caution to the wind just so that you can get the deal done. Look at the AOL and Time Warner merger as an example. In other words, they really didn't have a strategy behind how the acquisition would play out after the acquisition. They just thought it made a lot of sense because one was in the internet and the other was in print media. Both were in media and it should work okay, but it really didn't work okay. Many buyers are prone to make the same mistakes over and over again. In other words, there have been, the idea of capturing market share is really important. And then, figuring out whether or not it works after the fact. Don't fall in love with the deal. That's the bottom line. Because if you fall in love with the deal and you lose sight of what the strategic benefit is for your company, whether you're a buyer or you're a seller, and what the benefit is for your employees, particularly if you're a seller, will it necessarily play out the way you want it to if you just get caught up in getting the deal done? Avoidable mistake number two is being not careful or being uncareful in conducting your due diligence. And we've talked about due diligence on this show many times before, but you get caught up in the deal frenzy and you make the avoidable mistake number two, and that is failing to really dig in or pay attention to the due diligence side of the transaction. Buyers tend to focus on the financial aspects of the target. For example, they'll run all these fancy corporate models and cash flow projections, and they try to predict the future and make adjustments for risk, you know, applying fancy discounted cash flow formulas. But then they fail to do the most important stuff, that is legal and technical and regulatory due diligence. Or they also fail to focus on the fact that key employees may not be happy with the acquisition after the closing of the deal. And if you don't have your key employees come forward after the transaction closes, then you really don't have a successful transaction. You have an unsuccessful deal. So due diligence requires that you investigate all of these things. Now, emotions tend to undermine due diligence. Companies run out of organic growth, and so they look to buy market share, and they think that acquiring a company in the same market is going to necessarily become a strategic buy, when in fact, it really isn't. There may be synergies between the companies, but they haven't done the due diligence to really figure out how the companies fit together. So you've got to do your homework. When you acquire another company, you cannot let your broker or your consultant, you know, convince you that you've got to get the deal done simply because their commission is based on the deal closing. Extra due diligence may be required, particularly in this current economic climate. You've got to look behind the numbers. Don't just look at the numbers. So conduct your due diligence, legal due diligence, technical due diligence, and financial due diligence, and be very careful if you're the buyer so that you don't buy a pig in the poke. Avoidable mistake number three is getting married without being engaged. And we've talked about that both in terms of marketing as well as doing mergers and acquisitions. You know, you go out to lunch with somebody and you have a great lunch and the intent is to develop business with a person. At the end of the lunch, you ask, well, can I have your business? That's getting married without getting engaged. It really does take time to get to know who your customer is. And in this case, in an M&A transaction, it takes time to get to know the target if you're the buyer. Key to any successful acquisition is understanding the human capital element of the business, the things that the people do for the business that make it as great as it is. And if they're not treated well financially or they don't fit into the combined entity culturally, the business case for the deal may just have walked out the door. If everyone leaves, you didn't buy anything. I know, you know, you may have bought contracts or you may have bought technology, but if everyone leaves who can operate the technology or who can help you with the contracts, then you have nothing left. Those who aren't downsized may leave because they sense their futures aren't bright. So it's also making sure that your human capital stays if you really feel that it's important to have that going forward. There was a recent study that indicated that workers who were affected by a merger and acquisition transaction in the recession were two times more likely to leave the combined entity than someone at a company not involved in an M&A transaction. So that's something to keep in the back of your mind. So these are important facts. Avoidable mistake number four is what one author calls a cultural faux pas. In 1993, Volvo and Renault decided that they would merge. Volvo, a Swedish automaker who was extolled for safety and engineering of its cars, and Renault, a French automaker highly regarded for its vehicle's design and style, decided to tiptoe into the merger with a joint venture. Looking back, the JV was the smartest decision they made. The rest of it was disastrous. There were too many cultural incompatibilities to make the merger work. And not only did each company have a dissimilar brand that made it difficult to imagine the kinds of cars that the combination would produce, but the ownership was off kilter. Volvo was investor-owned, while the French government owned a majority of Renault. Needless to say, it really didn't work out. So you need to undertake cultural due diligence as part of your due diligence, and you have to examine what relationships are going to look like across the company, how work is going to get done, formally, informally, how customers and external parties are going to be treated, and what the learning environment's going to be. Avoidable mistake number 5, paying more than it's worth. Sandy Weill rode herd on some of the mega deals of the last century, acquiring Primerica, Shearson, Travelers Group, and Salomon Brothers, among others, before vacuuming up Citi. Not that he hasn't walked away from a deal or two. He said, "We were set to acquire the consumer finance business of manufacturers Hanover, and it would have been a pretty big deal, but the price got beyond what we felt was the value, and we dropped the talks." The converse, failing to blink at too high a price, describes the acquisition of medical device maker Guidant by Boston Scientific in 2006. And a few months later, Boston Scientific issued recalls or warnings on nearly 50,000 Guidant cardiac devices after the merger. So obviously, you know, paying too much for a company without really knowing what it's worth is a dangerous proposition. Avoidable mistake number 6, and the last one for today, is not respecting the boss of the other company. Failing to get the pulse of the other guy sitting across the table in a planned acquisition is a big no-no. You have to give enough attention to the fact that the other CEO doesn't really want to sell the company, particularly if he was the founder of the company, and he may want to continue to run it. Whereas the buyer is trying to integrate an organization that may have been dragging its heels as a result. And finally, they figure this out and they have to retire the CEO or retire the founder. It's crucial to ensure an important role for a target CEO, assuming he or she is actually worth keeping. For example, when Procter & Gamble acquired Gillette, Gillette's CEO got along famously with P&G's. They made it a point to get along, and they made it a point to integrate the companies carefully. If you've got questions about what mistakes to avoid on mergers and acquisitions, or if you've got questions on how to go about buying or selling your company, give us a call at Odin Feldman and Pittleman at 703-218-2100, and one of our corporate attorneys will give you a call back to tell you what you need to do to get your M&A house in order. I'm Wayne Zell, and you're listening to Blueprint for Wealth.
You're listening to Blueprint for Wealth with Wayne Zell. Learn how to better prepare for your future when Blueprint for Wealth returns in a moment.
A Legal Minute with Wayne Zell.
Should a business use a DBA? Depending on the business marketing strategy, a business may need to use a doing business as name, also known as a DBA. For instance, a sole proprietor runs the business alone, and the business's legal name will be the sole proprietor's full name. But the proprietor may market the business's AAA appliances. In that case, the business's legal name is different than the name under which it operates and is known by the customers. The proprietor is using a DBA. A DBA is also known as a fictitious business name, and most states require that businesses register fictitious business names. Using a DBA is common practice for business. It usually is the cornerstone for marketing efforts, and some businesses may be barred by using it in some states because it may be used by other businesses. So it involves professional business entities that must be known by the names of their owners, or in other cases, using a DBA is permissible as long as it's registered. Check out our website for more information.
Welcome back to Blueprint for Wealth, a program dedicated to securing your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. If you have questions for Wayne, you can email him at radio@ofplaw.com or call him at 703-218-2100. Now back to your host, Wayne Zell.
Welcome back to Blueprint for Wealth. I'm Wayne Zell, and with me today is my special guest, Mark Fries, who is a vice president at Merrill Lynch. Welcome, Mark.
Hey, welcome. Thank you.
And he is a special needs advisor based in Washington, D.C., and has helped clients plan for their financial futures since joining Merrill Lynch all the way back in 1987. Mark attended West Virginia University, where his concentration was in finance and accounting, and he's received both the Certified Special Needs Advisor and Chartered Retirement Planning Counselor designations. So we're going to talk a little bit about his special needs specialty today. Mark is a frequent speaker and has conducted seminars covering financial planning, education planning, special needs planning, obviously, and estate planning for many institutions, corporations, associations, and the like. And he's worked with the boards of many local companies and associations to help develop cohesive and comprehensive plans to meet their financial needs. Mark, where did you grow up originally?
I grew up, I was born in California, but I mainly grew up here on the East Coast.
That's right. You went to high school locally?
Yeah, I did go to high school locally, yep.
And your claim to fame, you say, has been that you've been in all 50 states. Not too many people have done that.
All 50 states. My dad was in the military, and so we traveled around a lot. Yep.
What was your favorite state?
Probably California.
Yeah, I don't blame you. It's nice out there. It's a little expensive, but it's really nice out there. How'd you end up in D.C.?
My dad was in the military, and so his last station was here, and so that's where he ended up.
What made you stay here?
I think it's a really good area. People are educated here. They need help, planning help. And I think it's important in this area to make sure that we're there and available.
Now, tell me a little bit about your business. What do you do? What does your group do? And how do you deliver service?
Our family helps, our group helps families with special needs map out a plan for success.
What kind of special needs are we talking about? What are special needs?
Well, special needs are a variety of different things, mainly families that have autism, Down syndrome, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it can also be taking care of the elderly, parents that have issues and they need financial planning help and life planning help.
So do you provide any kind of assistance on the Medicaid planning side as well?
We don't do that directly, but we are a referral source for attorneys that do a lot of that type of work, Medicaid and Medicare planning. And we want to make sure that the families know what services are available and benefits are available.
Why did you get into the business of special needs planning?
Very personal. My son is autistic, and so I went through a lot of those issues trying to figure out where to go, and the resources in our area I think are limited. And so I felt I'd already had a financial planning background, and so I figured we'd focus our business on that area.
You know, that's how I sort of got into it as well. I mean, particularly in terms of special needs planning, it was a very close friend of ours had a child with Down syndrome, and they came to us, you know, asking for help. And I, you know, said, sure. I mean, what am I going to say? Go see somebody else. So I basically did the research and have since then become accustomed to guiding people and helping set up special needs trusts and the like. Did you get any kind of specialized training for being able to provide this service to your clients?
Yeah, as you mentioned earlier, I did. I am a designation chartered retirement planning counselor. That helps with cash flow for elderly people.
Mm-hmm.
And I also have training as a certified special needs advisor through Merrill.
What kind of special needs training do you get to get that special designation? What do they teach you? What do you have to learn about?
You have to learn about all the benefits that are available, Medicaid, Medicare. There's a testing requirement. It's a pretty rigorous course in order to be able to get the designation.
And is that a course that's only provided through Merrill Lynch, or is it provided for advisors across the country who are interested in achieving that designation?
It is across the entire country. And the Chartered Retirement Planning Counselor also is a national recognized designation.
Yeah, that I'm familiar with, and it is a very tough exam. It's tough to receive that designation, as I understand it. What's been your biggest challenge in growing your business?
The biggest challenge has basically been probably giving up control of the business. I do a lot of traveling. I do a lot of speaking, educating people on what's out there, what the rules are, how to set up a special needs trust, what a special needs trust is. So that's been the hardest part is focusing, you know, my client base on areas that they need to be addressing and educated on.
When you say giving up control, what do you mean by that?
Giving up control because I'm not in the office all day long. I'm out traveling, doing radio shows, doing speaking engagements across the entire country. So I can't do the day-to-day work like I used to do. It's typical for a smaller business that's growing as you go through those pains and you can't touch everything anymore. And so you have to have good, educated, specialized people that can help you.
How many people are in your group today?
Right now we have 7 people.
That's a lot of people for a financial advisory group. What are their functions? What do they do?
Some people are out looking for new clients.
Sure.
Some people are helping with the financial planning part of it. Some people are helping with the investment planning of it. I have two people that answer phones and take care of any need that you might have. We consider ourselves kind of a concierge service for the special needs groups.
Community, yeah. Tell me about, you know, your primary clients. Obviously, it's individuals, families with special needs, but give us a little bit more background and in terms of why they would come to you as opposed to another financial advisor.
Well, mainly because we have the training and we have the resources. I consider myself kind of old school, like a Rolodex. So if you have a special needs child, I know where to go. I know how to set up a special needs trust. I know attorneys that can do that for you. We have a lot of background, and that background makes us very valuable. But the Rolodex is the biggest part, and it's not just the special needs part of it, but it's also making sure that you have all the resources available for other parts of your life that we can help with.
Tell me a little bit about some of the resources that people need. Let's say we've got a listener out there who has a child with autism or Asperger's, or you know, there's a Down syndrome child out there. Where do they turn? What types of resources should they be aware of that they can have provided to their children or to their loved one that may be in this situation?
Well, the first thing they need to know is the rules, and there are specific rules, how much they're allowed to have in assets for that particular child in order to be able to receive benefits from the government. The second would be other resources. So there could be healthcare issues. We have lots of connections in the healthcare field. It could be a lawyer that's able to draw up the trust that knows all the legal documents. It could be someone that's going to help with after-school care. I'm on the boards of a lot of different groups that help with those areas. And so we have connections that can make sure that family is taken care of.
And that's important because particularly if you're listening or you know somebody, if you're listening, that has a special needs child or a special needs adult that needs services, to have those resources available to you and to have somebody like Mark available is incredibly important. So obviously you've been successful in growing your practice. Tell us a little bit about the secret of your success. How did you achieve the success that you've achieved today?
Well, I think the success, first, I'm blessed to have success, but I would say perseverance and being a good listener. Most of our success is from having great business partners that can help our clients. I want to be the quarterback for our clients and be able to direct them to others that can help them to make their lives easier. Anyone working with elderly parents or a special needs child knows how hard it can be. Our job is to be the kind of old school Rolodex to make sure that we can be and provide success for our valued clients, to kind of send them in the right direction with the right resources to help.
Not to put you on the spot or anything, but we have some time to talk about this. A special needs trust is unique. It is a trust that is designed to enable the beneficiary to qualify for federal and state assistance, right? And so the assets that go into this trust for their benefit have to be handled in a particular way. Can you tell us a little bit more about how these trusts work and how they should work in terms of the beneficiary of the trust?
Well, there's specific rules on what the beneficiary is allowed to spend the money on, so you wouldn't have any overlap between that and something like Medicaid benefits. And it's particularly hard right now for people because interest rates are at all-time lows, and so a traditional method might be to put it in fixed income, and now you have to look at other alternatives in order to be able to get the type of income from that trust that the client might need.
Such as what types of investment philosophies are being employed for special needs trusts today?
Well, it's going to be a balanced portfolio, more balanced than it probably has been historically. So they might have more dividend-oriented type investments in there that are paying cash flows, because obviously for most families, they know that inflation is there. And as inflation continues and increases, you need to make sure your cash flow increases. So we have to have things that will provide cash flow where the cash flow is on scale to be able to keep up with inflation.
So dividend paying stocks is one alternative. Obviously, bonds is another alternative. Do you all get involved in helping clients select and purchase corporate bonds as well as municipal and government bonds?
We do all those things. Mainly we use indexes rather than individual bonds. We think they're more cost effective for the client, provides better diversification, and I think for a special needs trust would probably be a better choice.
So more index funds and index investing. Okay. In terms of special needs trusts, are they something new, or they've been around for a long time, or is it just that the public is becoming more aware of them, that they're getting a lot of attention these days?
They've been around for a long time. The public now, of course, is aware of them. Autism awareness is significant now. There's more people now that have been diagnosed with autism, at least currently, than ever, than I can ever remember. It's like one in every 88 kids right now.
And your involvement, are you involved in any boards or any charities that help out in that regard?
I am. I'm involved in a special needs pool trust that runs in Washington, D.C. that can help out, called Shared Horizons. I'm also on the board for the Northern Virginia Society for Autism. And I'm also involved in the City of Alexandria and their Disabilities Council.
How does a special needs pooled trust work? What is that?
Special needs pooled trust allows families that may not be able to afford their own trust to be able to have a designated trust in its pool. So all the assets are put in one particular place. So it allows it to be more cost effective potentially for the client, and allows all the assets to be able to be invested the same way. And then you also have all the benefits of the trustee to be able to take care of the services that are needed.
Can a pooled trust be used for individual needs of those that may be contributing to beneficiaries of those that are contributing to these trusts? Tell us a little bit about that.
Absolutely. Most pooled trusts, like the one in D.C., could have 400 or 500 different beneficiaries, and they have somebody that's designated to help them figure out what their needs are and to pay their bills and make sure that those things are all taken care of.
So if somebody needs to find out a little bit more about these special needs pooled trusts for autistic children or autistic adults, how would they go about finding out about that?
The best way is probably to reach out to me. I would be able to give you some information. I'm on the board, and we could certainly talk to you about what's available. There are a number of different pooled trusts across Virginia, Maryland, and D.C., so I would try to direct you in the right place for whatever your need was.
Now, I hear you have a special needs calculator. What's that?
Special needs calculator, really proud of. It's specifically through Merrill Lynch, and it allows you to be able to do a calculation on what your future needs might be for your child. So not only can it be used for a child with Down syndrome or autism, but I've also used it for clients that have, let's say, an elderly parent. There might be children that come to me and go, my parents are getting older and they have some issues. We're not sure how much it's going to cost to go in a nursing home. Can you figure that out for us? And we turn on the calculator and we can show you what the cost might be and give you some estimates to make sure that your loved ones are taken care of.
So it's a calculator that basically keeps updated with certain information that you otherwise wouldn't. You'd have to know what to put into the calculator in order to figure out what the needs are later on, correct?
Correct. And special needs is unusual because you're really planning for two separate lifetimes. You're planning for the lifetime of the parents, most likely you're taking care of the child, and you're also planning for the life of the child. And so it's a very specialized area that requires a lot of extra due diligence to make sure that they're going to be okay.
I think that's one thing that makes special needs planning unique, in that you really have to plan for not just one generation, but for multiple generations, particularly the special needs person. And if you haven't done that, then you haven't done your job correctly, and that you're providing an incredibly valuable service that really not very many professionals in the financial advisory community have experience in. So I think you're probably one of a very few in the area. How can people get in touch with you, Mark, in terms of finding out not only about you, but about your practice?
Well, the best way to get in touch with me is to give me a call. You can reach me at area code 202-659-6138. That's area code 202-659-6138. Or you can email me at mark_freese, F-R-I-E-S-E, at ml.com.
And that's Mark Freese at Merrill Lynch. You've been there an awful long time. You must enjoy it.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for being a special guest on Blueprint for Wealth, and thanks for giving us all that valuable information about special needs. Everybody, thank you for listening this week to another special topic and a special guest, and join us next week for another special topic and special guest on Blueprint for Wealth. Have a great week.
You've been listening to Wayne Zell and Blueprint for Wealth. Wayne will be back next Saturday morning at 10 a.m. with your Blueprint for Wealth right here on 1500 a.m. WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal news now.